Hello, listener. Today on the Mindful Meats podcast, we are joined by someone that I met online during a training program. And that training program was entitled Body Image and Disordered Eating. And as I sat listening to her and watching her, I was absolutely riveted. So I thought I would invite her to come on the podcast. And she said yes. So here we are. And her name is Mel Chivuko. Mel, you are very welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me. That was lovely as well. I'm glad
Pleasure.
that you were riveted and that you enjoyed the training. Thank you.
I did very much. And actually, we should say it was with the NED Centre, which is Neurodiversity Eating Disorders and Disordered Eating, with someone that we have in common, and that's Bernie Wright. Who we met through the National Centre for Eating Disorders when we were both doing some training there. So we'll give a little nod to Bernie, who is also on the podcast, who talks
Ah,
about eating disorders, and is now specialising in eating disorders around neurodiversity, which is another fascinating subject. Anyway, back to us today. And Mel is an integrative counsellor, and she specializes in disordered eating, but she also does a huge amount of therapeutic work around body image, around weight stigma, and body acceptance. And I thought that it would be really interesting to hear Mel's story, to hear what she does, and to hear why all of this work is so important for us, how it relates to disordered eating, how it relates to how we feel about ourselves, how we live our lives, and also what's going on in society to make work, the kind of work that Mel does, essential. Now we start with some quite strong common ground, Mel, don't we? So we both are anti-diet. I think that's probably not too strong a word, is it? You know, we don't hold with restriction. We discourage people from having numerical goals like weight and measurement, and let's not get started on BMI. You know, it's all about changing behaviors in order to have a better relationship with food. So over to you, Mel. Do please tell us a little bit more about you, and tell us about your life experience as much as you want to go into, which has sort of led you to where you are now, and how important this work is for you that you do.
Yeah, well, I think with many people who work in the sort of realm of body image and eating stuff, many of us have come from a place of struggling ourselves, which gives us a real insight into it. Because I find that sometimes people who've not had problems with food just don't get it. They don't really understand. A lot of clients say that to me. But friends, partners are supportive, but they just don't get it because they've never had that. So yeah, it was probably also seeing people at school, people have eating disorders as well that I knew. I never thought of myself as having an eating disorder or disordered eating because I think it was also very normalized, the way that I was constantly striving for a smaller body because that's praised in our society. So I never really thought of it as being that until I was older and then thought, oh, actually, some of this I would now see as disordered eating or just a difficult relationship with food. Just like not having a label to it, but just like always worrying about food, always thinking about food. And I can't say I'm completely free from it because I think when you've had that, it's still always there and can fluctuate. But bringing awareness to it means that I can go, oh, I know I'm going to get a bit panicky about food if I go away somewhere, I will do this, especially when it's sort of tied into having intolerances or allergies as well. I think that a lot of my earlier stage of eating patterns were based on wanting to lose weight. And then I had a sort of shifting moment when I was away traveling where I got sick quite a lot. I was in India and I got sick a lot. And then I made a promise to myself that I wasn't going to pursue weight loss and that I would look at health in a different way. But actually, that just led me to things that I would now think of as more ARFID, like avoidant restrictive food intake stuff, like being afraid of a lot of different foods, cutting a lot of different things out. So for years, I worked on just trying to find more of a balance with that. In terms of body image, oof, I don't even know where to start with that. Like, it sounds dramatic, but I think that this is also the way that clients might describe, but I never knew a way of not hating my body. Like, it just, my body was never okay from when I could remember. Which, when I ask people in training when they first had an experience of thinking their body wasn't okay, it's often very, very young. It's not teenage years, it's way before that. And I grew up with lots of people around me, mainly women, being on diets. Very normal to take your kids with you to Weight Watchers at the time in the 80s and the 90s. All this stuff that was just very normal. And when you've never seen another way, it's just completely normal. Restrictive patterns are normal. Dieting is very normal. Striving to be thin is something that I would never, like, you just have to. That's what everyone does.
Yes.
So yeah, that's all my sort of experience, and I suppose it's led me to also be quite realistic in the fact that when I started discovering like more body positive people on Instagram, I was like, this is great, but it's a massive jump to go from really hating your body to bikini body positivity. Like, it's lovely, I love it, but also that's a stretch. So I wanted to find a sort of middle ground of not being fluffy body positivity, but being like working towards acceptance in that difficult place of just being realistic of, come on, probably don't feel like I can love my body, but I can try and be a bit kinder and a bit more compassionate. And that is
Yes.
taking years, actually. It's a constant thing, but I'd rather have that realness and just be like, look, it's hard living in a larger body in the world as well. It's never going to be perfect, never going to love yourself, but it could just be sort of learning and growing around that, taking it day by day.
Yeah, and I think you make a really interesting point that actually it's either that at the moment for you, let's say, or it's this constant striving and it's constant battle and this constant trying to be something different, which is exhausting and, as we know, psychologically and physically damaging.
It really is. Yeah, it takes so much headspace and so much energy. I reflect on being at school and just like how preoccupied I was with thinking about how my thighs looked or how my stomach looked or the way that I was sitting, or if I could sit to look more thin. And do I remember anything being taught in those lessons? No, I don't. And I think now the really stubborn part of me just goes, I'm not going to do that now. I need my headspace for something else. I don't want to be distracted by the things that diet culture, I think a lot of this is tied into capitalism as well. It keeps us distracted. It keeps us looking within, blaming ourselves, shaming ourselves. And instead, I'm like, no, I want to be looking outwards and making a change in the world and looking at things that are important. Like more important, and so that my headspace is filled with things that are more important.
Yes, exactly, because that negativity is such an obstacle, isn't it? That sense that we don't have a right to be in the world because of the way that we look. I mean, I've heard that from clients that they that it affects their sense of their own personal value so deeply that it stops them living and actually stop it actually stops them understanding who they really are and therefore celebrating their own value. It just sort of doesn't happen, does it?
I suppose there's so much tied to self-worth in this, my own personal experiences of that as well, looking externally to find that self-worth, having to fit yourself into a box of what other people think is respectable, successful, And often that can come with like being young, thin, white, able-bodied, all these things sort of held up as the ideal, and they're impossible boxes to tick. And when you don't fit those, it's so easy to feel like you don't belong, you don't fit in. And I suppose if you throw neurodiversity into this, being neurodivergent, which many people I work with are, because there's a big overlap between that, gender, sexuality, class, everything else. I tend to look at things through really intersectional lens like that as I've learned more about this, because I've realized how crucial that is. And it's almost like for example, the sort of masking in neurodiversity and how exhausting that can be, whilst also trying to fit in to look for how your gender like should be, doing air quotes for should. And all the complexities of all this, which builds into someone's identity, where you're constantly trying to fit into what other people want you to be. And I think over the years, I just got really angry about that and just pushed her back on it all and just went, no, I don't want to be what other people want me to be all the time. I didn't even realize I had so much anger about that underneath. I guess that's where anger kind of found its way into being passion and activism, which I think is a healthy way of a good way of channeling that anger, I guess, once I accepted that the anger was even there, because I think I was in quite a bit of denial about it being there. But there were a lot of things to be angry about when you start unpacking all this stuff. The more I read, the more I learned, the more I sort of followed more people in the body acceptance world and anti-diet culture people. I thought, oh, I've had so much time with my life being wasted worrying about all this stuff, and there's a grief to it as well that people could have. I mean, I just got angry. For a lot of other people, I think they can just have a real sadness and grief to like, I wasted it. The Who's it? Chrissy Harrison wrote a book called Anti-Diet, has a podcast as well. She calls it the life thief, and I thought, it is, isn't it? It's years of people who could look back, and I see women especially, it's probably anybody, but women especially in their 50s, 60s, just going, I spent so much time just striving to be thin. It's just stole so many years of my life.
Yes, and it's been a constant narrative, and it's been my toxic friend, if you like, that's just run alongside my life all the time. But it's hard, isn't it? It's hard to stop that voice. It's hard to not compare, because it's just everywhere. I mean, how do you do that?
Yeah, exactly. It's hard because it's everywhere, and for many of us, it's been there since we were. It feels like since we were born. For me, it feels like since I was born, because it's been ingrained. So it's hard. It's hardwired. So I think it's hard to completely undo it. And I found in my personal experience, it's just taken years and years of reading, learning, therapy, growth, all this stuff that I still say is a work in progress, because you've had so many, for me, I've had so many years of learning one thing one way. It can't just be undone quickly. It's going to be a whole load of years. And this is why I like the idea of working towards accepting your body, as opposed to it just being a kind of just be body positive and love your body now, or working towards a better relationship with food. Because it's not something you can give up or just change quickly. It's a whole process of the whole relationship, your relationship with exercise as well. That's it. All of these are whole journeys in themselves, and I guess for me, training to be a counselor very much puts you in that thing of it kind of like speeds up the. I was doing it. I'd had quite a bit of therapy and stuff before that, but I think it supercharges it, doesn't it? When you're training to be a therapist, it's like hardcore reflection all the time. So that kind of sped me ahead a little bit, and I learned so much from the clients and everyone that I see in this, because everybody is so. There's similarities in having diet culture and experiences and narrative, but within that, everyone's personal experiences of it are very different, and the nuance of their identities is very different as well. So I'm always learning.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, I remember when I did the training for the National Centre for Eating Disorders, what was quite surprising was how many breakout groups we went into and how we were actually sharing our own experience. I mean, I don't know why I was surprised, really, because it made sense that we worked with our own experiences first to try and understand those and then interpret those. And all of us were on a self-development, self-discovery journey, as well as learning how to support, others. But I was just thinking about this whole situation now, and I kind of wondered if you think that society is getting better in this area, whether it's learning something, whether it's perhaps starting to present bodies in a slightly wider context. Can you see some improvements happening?
Yes, I'd want to say definitely yes, but some elements no. I think this would very much, I suppose, come into the whole social media thing, which is sometimes I think oversimplified to social media makes people's body image worse, social media exacerbates eating disorders, which I agree it can, but it's so vast that it depends on how you use it. So it can also be really helpful because there's so many people now talking about body acceptance, and there's so many visual representations of people living their true self. There's people, when I joined, when I was on Facebook and other things, that was way before I joined Instagram. It was later, and I made the decision with Instagram that I was going to use it specifically for more body acceptance type stuff. So I just followed. I followed lots of people in larger bodies who were wearing things that I never would have worn, and bikinis and crop tops, because I wanted to change my normal. I wanted to change what I'd seen for so long. And to do that is to sort of reprogram all the stuff that we're used to seeing in the media of sort of lots of thin people, lots of young, thin, white people. And I wanted to see everything different. So I purposely went into it with that intention to see lots of different sorts of bodies. And I think it really helped me so much. Most things that I've read, people that I've learned from, all the things I've done, I've found through social media. So it's been absolutely crucial for me. So it can be so helpful with that intention. But I was already of an age and a place where I could do that. And I guess the concern is for younger people, they can easily get sucked into something very different than that. If they don't know what they're looking for, or they're not at that stage yet, that's where I guess it becomes a little bit worrying, because we have a lot of things that are, I know that things like TikTok are trying to clamp down on eating disorder things, but there's always a way around that for people. Social media is just too big for them to be able to control all that kind of content. But I think there's a definite vulnerability for people to slip into online worlds that are that would exacerbate that. Plus, I think over the generations, you just have a different idea of beauty. Like the ideal just changes, and it comes in a different package. So it's becoming a little bit more insidious in a way, like just a bit more subtle, in that Weight Watchers and all these places have discovered now that dieting isn't cool anymore. So now they're not using the word diets. They're
Reinventing
now being,
themselves or trying to. Yes, exactly.
yes, like WW, yeah, we know who you are. This is not changing anything. Things like trying to use psychological behavior change, I feel like they're co-opting the words a little bit, actually, and they're just being very sneaky, because they're still charging you to tell you how to eat, to tell you to track your foods. And I can understand why people choose to do that, but I do feel like these are a lot of the same things, just repackaged to go with the fact they go, oh yeah, it's about being strong now, not being skinny. But then they've still got to make money, haven't they? At the end of the day, they're just adapting to make money off us, and so it's still potentially going to be there. If you're striving to be strong and not skinny, but you're still feeling guilty if you're not going to the gym, if you still feel ashamed of your body, the same shame and the same feelings and the same intention to change in a sort of societally expectation sort of way, it's still there. It's just moved on to something else.
Yes, because that's
So
the
it's
driver to keep going back. It's a,
Yes.
and that's why the model works, and that's why the dieting industry is worth so much money. And you are still essentially paying some of these groups to stand on a scale and to either be clapped or, ooh, whichever it might be. It's just so fundamentally damaging. I did want to talk today also about weight stigma. Because you talked a lot about it when we did the training. And I think it's something that some people are not aware that perhaps they carry themselves. And also I think to have a conversation about how damaging it is to people and what it might look like. Could you share your thoughts about weight stigma for us, Mel?
Yeah, well, as I mean, I'm somebody who's never been thin. I'm in a larger body, or as the fat community are using the word fat a little bit more now to try and reclaim the word. It's still not easy to use it for many people, and I just let people, describe themselves however they want. I'll generally say the term in a larger body because it sounds kind of more gentle, and I think everyone's usually okay with that term. Fat has such it's such a powerful word, I think more sometimes than any other swear word. It feels like almost the worst thing that you could ever call someone, which it actually shows the amount of fat phobia and weight stigma there is in the world by the fact that that word is so harmful.
What's
And
your view of the word
yeah,
obese and obesity? Do you have a view on those terms?
I think there's a there's I suppose there's the different camps in this, isn't there? There's very much the NHS world of not seen as any issue at all, and just researchers, people working in the NHS, they need to use the words. They have to. It's part of their jobs. I get that. In terms of me, I wouldn't use it because I don't work in that world. And I know that it's a harmful world associated with weight stigma, with medical stigma, with people not being able to get the care that they need, and being judged, being blamed, being blamed for their own health, being blamed for the demise of the NHS. Like, it's huge, actually, what fat people, particularly working class fat people, I find are blamed for in that sense. And I know that there's kind of the move within the, say, I don't know, maybe calling people who work in obesity or bariatrics or like weight management or something to have an understanding of weight stigma. And so instead say person with obesity. I think it's the
Yes.
same for me. I think it's all the same stuff. It positions it as a disease. And I do think that people in larger bodies aren't necessarily diseased. I don't think obesity is necessarily a disease. I think that there are people who are categorized as obese on the BMI chart who actually, I mean, they say that bodybuilders and stuff would actually be on the obese, it's the BMI rubbish, isn't it? So I do think there's people, though, in larger bodies who are all varying degrees of health, as are thin people, all varying degrees of health as well. And actually,
Yes.
even not being healthy doesn't mean that that person isn't deserving of respect, because some people can't be healthy because maybe they have an illness or a chronic illness or a disability or mobility issues. Like, it isn't a prerequisite to have to like be healthy to have respect. So I just think that even if people are in larger bodies, there is no problem with that. If they want to do things to change, as you say, once they've had an awareness of understanding of what's behind that, if I'm making the decision to lose weight based on trying to fit in with a society, trying to feel loved, trying to cure my confidence and self-worth issues, which I was, it's probably not the best way to do it. But if you've been through all this thing and you want to make some choices for the health, and I do think that weight loss is given a lot of credit for everything, isn't it? Somebody loses weight as a side effect to maybe working on their mental health, maybe they have some therapy, maybe they improve their sleep, maybe they reduce their stress. All these things that you can do to help yourself, maybe in your life, if you wanted to. Maybe you do some movement, that some dance classes or some swimming that you enjoy. And it's not about that, like losing weight, but as a side effect, a person might actually lose weight then. And then everybody else goes, oh, you've lost weight. That's like the thing that's making you healthier. For me, I'm
Yeah.
like, no, it's the side effects. It's just the side effects. What about everything else that this person as maybe done if they wanted to make that choice. It is very hard though, because I think that diet culture is still always there as like an underpinning of it. And certainly, I've had this myself on with clients where then they start to lose weight. There's no doubt they're going to have a little kind of, oh, I feel good about that because that's what society has taught me from birth to know, oh, I feel good about it. But the actual, I think the mindset shift there is the very different thing of the basis that it's not based on intentional weight loss or based around numbers or based around other people's expectations, and not ignoring underlying factors, because with so much eating and body related stuff, obviously there's so much to do with self-worth, trauma, other things that it this is that you potentially a coping strategy for.
Yes,
Sorry, I've gone off the
absolutely.
topic of weight stigma,
No,
haven't I?
that's absolutely fine. But it brought to mind two things for me. And one is absolutely this idea that we cannot judge health just on size. And I think that you're right, that we automatically, I think because of how it's been presented to us for so many years, we look at someone who is slim and we think that they are all thin, to use your word, to we think that they are automatically healthy. We look at someone who is in a larger body and we think that they're not healthy, less healthy. And it's kind of how that just doesn't make any sense at all. Somebody who's, I mean, I know that when I was very thin, I was managing that through the most unhealthy eating pattern you could possibly imagine, and then you have, say, let's take, as you said, a sports person. You've got someone who is in the England front row rugby team. That is a large body. That is a large, strong body, and they can be in that scrum and they can push and they can do that for 90 minutes. God, boy, are they fit and healthy. And it just to be able to try and break this would just make such a difference. And I just wanted to have my own little rant there, which I've now
Yes,
done.
thank you. Yeah, that's
And I also think the other thing is around definitely having to work on body acceptance at the same time as perhaps wanting to change the body that we're in. I mean, I certainly find that with a lot of my clients who come to me initially saying, well, I want to lose 2 stone. I go, okay, well, let's have a little conversation about that. And we'll have a look at the previous history and pick up, the dieting messages and the psychology that's going on. And very, very often, by the time we've done some work together, either one-to-one or on my program, they will get halfway through and they will be saying, actually, I'm absolutely fine. I feel so much better. I'm eating better. I'm really, really comfortable. And they lose that desire. Thank heavens, they lose that desire to get down to that magic number that they've held on to since they were, could be anything, could be 12. For just so long, this idea that this is the size that they need to be. But if somebody does want to change, then the body acceptance of who they are now is so important, isn't it, for the f positivity necessary to have the confidence to make those health changes, because otherwise we're just constantly beating ourselves up about it and we're hiding ourselves and we're not getting ourselves out in the fresh air and moving around like we really need to. And the other thing that I also think exists is that judgment around when we look at someone who is in a larger body. And I happened to notice, I was looking at your Instagram yesterday in preparation for the conversation, and you have one post that talks about laziness, and how there's this automatic idea, isn't there? This judgment that we look at someone who is in a larger body and we say, overeats, lazy, doesn't really do anything, doesn't take any pride in their appearance. I mean, what can we do? It's So everybody listening, if everybody listen now, most of my podcasts, I think the first podcast that I ever did is up to something like 9,000 downloads. So there's a potential for 9 or 10,000 people to be listening to this. What can they do to help break down this judgment and this stigma, this weight stigma that is just everywhere?
Yeah, no pressure then. This is like my moment
Well, yeah.
to say. Yeah, no, this it's such a big societal thing. Some of these, a lot of this I think of as being systemic, and they're big, much bigger, wider changes that would need to happen to help people with their food. I think so much of it ties into class and into poverty and into things as well. How can you ever expect anyone to have a decent relationship with food, if they are growing up using food banks or having food insecurity and things? So there's a big systemic stuff. On an individual basis, I guess, like you talked about with the training earlier, and this is very much, I suppose, what therapists are led into doing, of this sort of self-reflection as you learn. And that's the important part, because I guess it starts with you as an individual thinking, what are the influences for me growing up? Because before, I guess, helping anybody else, there's got to be an understanding of your own biases, because we all have them. And it would be impossible not to, because diet culture is so strong that we've all grown up in it. So medical professionals have that as well. That's why there is medical weight stigma as well. And people in larger bodies often quite scared to go and see a doctor if they've had a bad experience or they anticipate there's going to be. So it means that maybe they don't go for checkups as often, and this can actually then lead to, more problems. So medical weight stigma is creating a bit more of a problem in that sense. Yeah, on an individual level, I feel like there's a lot more people beyond sort of counselors are encouraged to be very reflective, but I feel like there's a lot of other industries, a lot of people working with people on this basis that could do with more kind of self-reflection on this. And you don't need to, I think we need to be kind and compassionate to ourselves through that, because just because you've also experienced weight stigma and fat phobia like I have, it doesn't mean that I also haven't had it, because I've grown up thinking thinner is better. So I've also had to kind of go, yeah, I've probably, there've been lots of times when I'll have judged people also in larger bodies, because that's what we're taught to do. So we have to kind of, I suppose, let ourselves off the hook a little bit with that. And go, this isn't about kind of, shaming ourselves, making ourselves feel bad about it, but recognizing and acknowledging of like, oh, maybe I've been taught some things about people that aren't necessarily true. Maybe especially people like in smaller bodies who maybe haven't experienced weight stigma, to them maybe like follow some people on social media or learn a little bit more to understand more experiences of people that have. So they can sort of build empathy for those people, and that in turn, if they're counselors working with clients or nutritionists or whatever, that's only going to help them have more understanding for working with people and helping others through it. I'd say a lot of my work, mainly being with people in larger bodies, is honoring how hard it is to live in a world with that kind of stigma and discrimination, and they've often not really had that validated before. I feel like with some people, I've been the only person who doesn't tell them to lose weight. Because everybody else in their life does. And it's not dramatic to say that, I've seen people who are really scared that they're going to die because their families are telling them that, they're going to die because they're fat. And sadly, all that does is make people double down on their eating disorder or disordered eating or like dieting, yoga dieting, which makes the whole cycle even worse and just continues the cycle. There's so many things which are perpetuating this cycle in our society, like more encouragement to diet, government initiatives like calories on menus. I feel all of these things are really backfiring and actually just encouraging disordered eating. Going to the doctors and I'm saying, if you just like, have you considered some diet and exercise, go away and do your own lifestyle change. If people knew how to do that, they would have done that before. If it worked, it would have worked already. A lot of this is also just way too surface level. We're not taking into account, like I said, the systemic stuff, but also trauma in people's lives, attachment difficulties. Certainly in my work, I find that people say we're not actually talking about food that much. We've talked about a lot of other things that are relational or from childhood, really getting to like the underpinning stuff as well, which our society doesn't tend to go to because it goes for the quicker fixes because they're cheaper, they're easier, and people want quick fixes, I guess, as well. Yeah, there's I think those are the things that the short version of this is looking at your own relationship with food, narratives you grew up with, your own biases on an individual level, and then on a societal level, there's a lot more that we can maybe help influence if there is time for that. I know that activism and influence is hard for people to do, and I'm not doing so much of it now because I think I got pretty sort of tired of it. But I tend to think of it on a basis of I'm helping people individually, but it's very important for me on a more systemic level that I'm sort of campaigning and working towards reducing weight stigma, turning people sort of highlighting the dangers of diet culture on more of a societal level as well.
Yes. And I think that part of that reflection is also on an individual responsibility level. We can catch ourselves, can't we? We can catch ourselves if we're thinking judgmentally, if we're thinking with bias, if we are commenting, and actually perhaps if someone around us is commenting, we could pick them up on it, couldn't we? We could actually challenge them on where that attitude is coming from. How do you know this thing about this particular person that we can see? And that's a small thing, but if we're all doing it collectively, that could actually have an impact. So I like to give people the opportunity to talk about any aspect of their work when they come on here. So for people to work with you then, Mel, they can, because you have a private practice, don't you? And you're based in Bristol, I think,
I
now.
am, yes. So my work is online, so I can see
Right.
anyone from
So you
anywhere in
can
the UK.
see someone from anywhere. And so typically, how would somebody present themselves to you if they came to work with you? What would be your sort of usual client, if there is a usual client, even?
I think probably through to me being in a larger body myself and being quite like vocal about that and about weight stigma, I do tend to attract people that are also in larger bodies. I do think that that's the nature of the fallout of the eating disorder system as well here, because our eating disorder system, in my view, is very narrow, very gatekeeps, probably because there isn't the money or the resources. So I understand why. But there can be a lot of people rejected from eating disorder services, or they don't tick the boxes, or it's not extreme enough. But I feel that this level of disordered eating, body image concerns, body image anxieties is, having such an impact on so many people's lives, even if they don't tick the box of an eating disorder. And I feel like this is a huge gray area of people, and a lot of them are in larger bodies because we don't, I think it's quite hard for our society to think eating disorders, someone in a large, I think a lot of people think eating disorder, anorexia, because it's the main thing we hear about, and it is, very serious, with the most the highest mortality rate of all of them. But most people, I think, there's this level of disordered eating of people who are in larger bodies. They wouldn't ever think of themselves as having an eating disorder, like I didn't. They are impacted by weight stigma, so they have to keep striving to lose weight, and they're just sort of stuck in this thing, which has resulted in a lot of shame. So I guess the one common factor is a lot of people tend to feel shame about themselves, about their bodies. A lot of people may be quite torn. I think there's some people that I tend to see that have started work on and have read quite a few things about body acceptance and are sort of in that world, but finding a conflict between the two as well, of like, but I still have these like diet culture thoughts. Well, of course you are, because they're like ingrained, and that's okay. really wanting to actually be this like body positive person and like take it for the community and for the team. And then they feel like they let down the body positive community if they're not being body positive enough. So
Yes,
it's just
oh goodness.
it ends up being another like sometimes that's why I didn't want it to be this body positivity wear a bikini jiggle about thing. As much as that's amazing to see, it's maybe just not realistic and also making people feel not good enough then for still, because so there's so much complexity in it. Most people, a lot of people I work with are neurodiverse, and some point I like to think that there's neurodivergence like ADHD, autism, things like that. But even if there isn't a diagnosis, it's really important to be looking at these sort of things through that lens, because everybody has different learning needs. Everybody's kind of neurodiverse in different ways, in the sense of different learning needs. And different ways of being, and it can be a crossover with like with foods, with food issues as well, even if they don't necessarily have a diagnosis. Because sometimes now getting a diagnosis of something like ADHD takes a long time now because of waiting list, doesn't it? So it's good. There's definitely things that stuff there. Maybe it's also the nature of my work of just trying to be very inclusive, adaptable. I trained in an integrated way, but in a pluralistic way, which is all about collaboration and minimizing power, really, because I do feel sometimes the old school therapy world can be quite based in power of the kind of all-knowing therapist. And I feel like the sort of modern way, or the way that I've been trained, is to kind of reduce those power dynamics a bit, or at least bring them in and kind of talk about those and look at things in a wider systemic societal intersectional way. So yeah, my practice, my intention for my practice was just to be collaborative, open, and inclusive, to be, I guess, ne neurodiverse affirming, neuroaffirming, whatever you want to be, gender open to kind of gender sexuality, gender affirming, like, because this is where there's so much overlap with eating disorders and that. And I feel like that's where a lot of the barriers are for people to go and access help, in the fact that, like, actually, this is complex because it's tied into things to do with gender. It's tied into to do, and that's not going to be accepted if I go and see a medical professional. So people are generally, they could be dealing with, if they're in a larger body, weight stigma, discrimination to do with their gender as well, being misgendered things. All of those things are going to make the building blocks to put people off going and seeking help. So I feel like this is the important work for me to be doing, this bit where people face the barriers, got caught in the net, the in-betweeny things, a space for people to be where they're not going to feel judged, which I guess is all counseling, but in specifically to this, of like, I think a lot of people feel comfort knowing that if they've experienced weight stigma, they know that I know what that feels like as well, and that may be some assurance to them.
Yes, absolutely. Wow. Yes, I'm just going to let all of that land, and it's incredible that it's so broad and it's so open and it's so enveloping for people that need that kind of environment to explore this. And sadly, the time ticks on, doesn't it? But to bring it to a close, just I think to go back to this idea of accepting ourselves. And we're not talking about, Californian, I love my body necessarily, are we? We're talking about acceptance. And I think that word is really important. We don't have to love every single part, but just to accept it and to be grateful, perhaps also, and to just make the most of it whilst trying to be ourselves. What sort of parting message might you give, or a couple of things that perhaps people could start thinking differently about themselves in order to create more body acceptance within them?
Yes, well, the acceptance can feel really hard, I think, when you've never really had a kind voice for yourself. Because I'd never really had a kind voice for myself. It was never there. And I find with so many clients, It's not there. And building that can really take a really long time when it's coming from nowhere. So I'd say that actually, this is one thing I probably wasn't very good at, but having patience for that and trusting that it can come eventually. But when you've had a long time of, just having a not being able to speak to yourself in a very nice way, having a lot of critical thoughts, not having a compassionate voice, even a concept of having a compassionate voice in yourself can be quite difficult, but it can be built over time. It can take a long time, and acceptance of yourself in any form can take a really long time. It needs time to heal and to grow. So maybe to, I guess I'm just speaking from my own experience here of just like it will grow really slowly. And nothing needs to be fixed right now. You don't need to do anything right now. You don't need to strive to be loving your body in a bikini. Just meet yourself where you're at right now. Going back to the laziness thing. And if laziness doesn't exist, you don't have to be striving all the time. We've been taught to strive and push and diet and be thin and be successful in this. And actually, even now, I'm still with that laziness phase. I was just like, I'm going to sit down and just breathe for a little bit now because I'd been pushing and pushing in a different way through all my studies. So, there's to try and find a bit of time and a bit of peace with just being okay where you're at. Let yourself off the hook a little bit. Easier said than done, but I think that's from my own experience what I would say to people. You're all right where you're at, and just keep chipping away at it.
Little steps. You're enough. You're all right where you're at. It's kindness, compassion. What a lovely way to finish. Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Mel, so much. Been really, really interesting. And this will be out with all your details as well. So listener, you can get in touch with Mel. You can find out more about how she works with people, what she does, on top of what she's already talked to us about so eloquently today. She also has a fantastic blog with lots of really good articles, so that's worth dipping into as well. So, Mel, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a great conversation to have. Always keen to talk about these things and write about them. Obviously, I'm very, very passionate about this. So I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you about this. Thank you.
You're very, very welcome. And that just shines through in the voice and also on camera here. So listener, thank you very much. That's another of our mindful meets wrapped up. There are, I think, at the point of recording, something like 70 plus episodes for you to listen. Some are with guests and some are just me emptying my head on something that happens to come to mind at that particular moment. I hope you're enjoying them. If you are enjoying them, please do follow and please do rate the podcast so that we can get it out there to even more people. But for now, thank you very much for listening, and I will see you next time.